one thing that one phenomena, one experience, one aspect of mind that we can study is thoughts, because they do happen. And yeah, and we tend, see if it's true for you, but we tend to be fascinated by the content of our thoughts. Huh? So there's a thought, and fascinated, and also kind of believers, like really like, give me a thought and I'll adhere to it. You know, I'll believe it, I'll follow it anywhere it goes. You know, fascinated, enamored with the thoughts. And that's certainly one way I think that we experience thinking, one kind of relationship, what's happening, how are you, what's the relationship with it, how are you aware of it, or how is it known? It's known with fascination, with adherence, identification. It's and so we could call this maybe basic delusion. You know, the ignorance that we want to cut through with wisdom might be just that, or partly this. This kind of delusion, not knowing that a thought is a thought, thinking that it's a fact, that it's true. Like in, I'm a piece of shit, you know. That's factual. I'm never going to amount to anything. That's factual. I'm better than anyone else. That's factual. You know, all these things are anything else, you know. And so practicing, bringing mindfulness in that field, that third foundation, you know, study of mind. There's this study interest that we can have in presently arisen mind states, qualities of mind, the presence, the absence of curiosity, the presence, absence of boredom, of despair, of hope, of joy, of amusement, surprise, irritation, etc. Always worth being aware of. And maybe one aspect of these mind states, so different aspects of an emotion or a mind state could be physical sensations. The lightness, the heaviness, the contraction, the whatever we feel, the burning. So that's one aspect. Another aspect is maybe the kind of ambiance. It's not exactly words, thoughts. It's just like a sense that there's a threat, you know, a sense that whatever else is there, you know, that I should disappear, a sense that it shouldn't be happening, or yeah. So with emotions, it gives a kind of a coloring to the world. Huh? I liked once I heard Charles Genoux, a Swiss teacher from Switzerland. Charles was saying emotions are, how did he say that? It's the opposite of a chameleon. Chameleon take the color of their environment. And emotion give color to the environment. So in discouragement, everything looks bleak, you know. In hope, everything looks hopeful, workable. And so there's this kind of ambiance, this play of perception, how it projects itself on the world, or the other suddenly is an enemy, you know, appears as an enemy. Or a friend, or lovable, or detestable. So that's another aspect of a mood and emotion. Another aspect maybe is thoughts. How do emotions and mood express themselves? With comments, with projections, thoughts. And so we can study this here. And instead of being fascinated by the content, what it says, investing in that, you know, it's going to lead somewhere. I don't want to evilize thoughts, you know, they could be very useful, but maybe we could bring balance or certainly investigation to our relationship to them, you know, so that we could choose maybe to follow some and abandon others and hold lightly some that appear very heavy and serious and true and solid and permanent and etc., you know. So it's definitely worthy of investigation. So investigation here in this lab doesn't mean thinking about. That's like the, we have to rethink about this word when it's in the context of meditation, Buddhist practice, investigation of phenomena, dhammavicaya. Dhammavicaya in Pali, investigation of phenomena means maybe we could suggest just being aware of, being with, being close to. It doesn't mean thinking about it. It means it's a little bit like a biologist in nature, you know? That, you know, you go in the bush, you don't mess with the beaver. You just hide there and look at what they do. And by this, you know, the hours of awareness, of paying attention, suddenly insight. Ah, that's what they do. They come out at night. Ah, they fight. Oh no, they play. They're actually socializing. And so we just stay attentive, stay attentive. Bonnie Durand, sitting here a few years back, researcher in sociology, saying mindfulness is high quality data collection. You just take it in, take it in. And so the same thing can be done with thoughts. Being aware of the arising of a thought, the passing of a thought. Being aware of the presence of thinking, the absence of thinking. Sometimes the mind has a lot to say, no? It just keeps saying a bunch of things. Sometimes it doesn't have much to say. It's just taking in. So we can be aware of the presence of thinking, the absence of it. I would like to suggest, hypothesis, don't want to insult anybody, but I think most of our thinking is led by agitation. Not much else than that. How dare you? just as a hypothesis to work with, you know, would it be possible that a lot of what we think is just an expression of agitation? And that, you know, gives us a little different view of the thing, you know. And so so here we can be aware of this, aware of this. Yeah, maybe I won't go too far with this, not so it doesn't get too intense and I have to find all this, because there's much to say about that. But I think bringing a more healthy relationship to thoughts could help us recognize which ones are, you know, being led by discernment, wisdom, kindness, generosity, understanding, etc., and let these blossom, maybe. One thing that I've noticed, maybe I'll just say this, it's sometimes, you know, I'll be thinking obsessively, like a lot of thinking, not many gaps, you know, and looping a lot, like why did I, and if that, etc. And some things that I've noticed in terms of, so it's something I do these days is, when I notice there's a lot of agitation, there's just a few questions I'll ask to see what's driving this. Is I notice that the system tends to not do so well at accepting, acknowledging the lack of resolve, unresolvedness, and so. Sometimes I'll just start with this. Is there something that is unresolved, Pascal, that you can't stand that it's unresolved? But, you know, propulse, is propelling a lot of thinking. And sometimes that's what I find. So then I'll ask the question, could it be okay that it's not resolved, that we don't know yet what's going to happen, or what to say, or what to do, or how to hold that? Is it okay that we don't know? Can it be okay just for a moment that we don't know? And often I can see that it brings the volume and the debit, the amount of thoughts down a bit. So it has to do with acceptance of the fact that something is unresolved. Actually, that reflection started with, I think it was Ajahn Amaro, on a retreat, the revered teacher, who just suggested, I don't know if he said that to me, it felt like he did, he might have, but he said anyway something like, at the moment of death, maybe not everything will be resolved. Mm-hmm. Will you be able to die in peace? And it really hit me, like, wow, it's true. Like, so it would be worth learning how to be with the unresolved. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm not going to do anything about it, but maybe less obsessing about it and accepting, yeah, some things are unresolved. And in that kind of vein or field, uncertain. I want to be certain of something, so I'm going to think about it. If I say this, they'll do that. Another. I want to be certain of the outcome. Is it okay, Pascal, that it's uncertain? We don't know. Or sometimes it's around powerlessness. Don't want to feel powerlessness. So I'm going to speed the thinking to avoid it at all cost, find power somewhere, you know, and to maybe to acknowledge that. It doesn't seem like I have much power right now over this. Could it be okay? It seems like it's a very human experience. Uncertainty, not having resolved everything, feeling like there's a lack of power to, you know, implement change or something like this. And is it possible to rest in that discomfort? Because the Buddha talks about an unconditional freedom, that things are resolved or not, that they're certain or not, that I have power over something or not. And I remember in one retreat talking about this, and Pat Ruckman, local star, Pat Ruckman from Toronto, was co-teaching. I was co-teaching with her, and she said, there is power in the way we're going to respond. You know, we might not have power to change what is happening in that part of the world or this other part of the world, or that what's happening for somebody else or a situation in our lives, but there is agency, and that's what we're working on here, the inner agency. Maybe I can't change the thing, but maybe the way I hold it, the way I meet it, maybe there's some room there, some playroom, some possibilities. And so, you know, recognizing that the thinking might be, you know, a resistance to, so it's a mind state of resistance to the uncertain, the unresolved. Or it could be something else. So some of the ways to work with thoughts is to notice the arising, the passing away of the kind of energy underneath. It's the mood, it's an expression of what. Maybe starting by checking in if there could be some agitation going on. The answer is pretty much sure to be yes, because in the unfolding of awakening, there's kind of stages to awakening, at least in this tradition, Theravada tradition, the stages of awakening. And it's only in the last stage of awakening that agitation falls. So unless you're fully awake, there is some agitation happening now. And it's the case for me. As you can just see. So shall we play with this a little bit? Explore that? And, you know, I like this verb play and explore. To me, like, what I'd like to impart around this is that we can try stuff, you know. Trial and errors. It's not like we have to get it right. It's not that mind state. It's like, you know, we're already totally caught in thoughts most of the time, so we can play with it a little bit and not succeed so much. It's fine. We're already pretty much failing. So buckle up. And we can, if we want, describing maybe a little bit my personal practice. Might resonate for you. But we could, if we want, start by just being aware of the environment we're in. And I'm suggesting this because I feel it's a little bit less frontal than going straight in the body. Mm. Although it's very much a body experience because it's the senses that are revealing the environment, but it's a kind of a soft way, I find. Being aware of the environment through the light, even through the eyes closed, or through hearing. Feeling the space around us. The ground or underneath. And in the same way that the earth, the body is resting on the earth, the body very naturally resting on the earth, in the same way maybe our attention can rest in the body for a moment. Awareness can land and rest in the breathing body, in the sitting body. In the sensitive body. And that might be an excellent doorway, an excellent way to discovering the state of this meditator, as we're here with the environment, with the breathing body, we might notice the state of this being. A certain level of calm or agitation, whichever way you take it. And if it feels interesting to you, if it seems interesting, you could see It's possible to become aware of the next thought that will cross the mind. Just noticing the next thought as it appears. And maybe it'll be something said or heard, or something seen, something sharp or vague, or an image moving or still, or maybe something else altogether, or nothing. And what happens when we bring the light of awareness to thoughts? What happens, or at least to the next one? And what happens between thoughts? What is known then? Maybe it's possible to notice the disappearance of a thought. It's vanishing, it's passing. If you want, you could think of your shoes. This is not your shoes. This is a thought. If you want, you could think a few times. Maybe that'll be the last exploration before we go to silence. If you want, you could think voluntarily, intentionally, just to explore thought, produce a thought. It'll be the same a number of times. You could think, I am. Put your full name in there. First name, family name. I am so and so. And I am meditating right now. Think this a few times just to feel how it feels. And if you want, drop the last part of the sentence, just keeping I am and the full name a few times. And if you want to drop the family name, keep just the I am and the first name. Does it feel the same or different? Drop the first name, keeping just the first two words. And just the first word. Letting go of that one too. noticing the presence or the absence of thought, the arising or the passing of a thought. Very simple. Okay, so what do you think? It might be interesting for you, or I think maybe if there is, for example, strong emotions, a lot of emotion, maybe it's not the right time to do that investigation because there's so much going on. It's better to attend to you know, the broken heart or to the strong emotion that is there. Connect with nature, find some beauty. So not to attend to something so tricky, so light and ephemeral and seductive in this way. So it needs the right condition, maybe some amount of calm to be able to explore this. I'll tell you two little things maybe to highlight a bit. So what I did with the shoes, this is an exercise. Once I was teaching with Anushka Fernandopoulou, and she was sitting just next to me, and she was having us do the exercise. And I knew exactly what she was doing. I knew exactly why we were doing what we were doing. And I saw my shoes, and she said, "This is not your shoes." And in my mind, I was like, "No, this is my shoes. I know it's my shoes." And just like, it highlighted for me that I'm a fool. You know? And this is benign, so it looks like nothing. It's not very important. But at one point, I'm with a friend, practitioner, who's been practicing for a long time, is wise. And this person has a health conditions, a condition that is new and can't do what they used to do. Hike and walk freely around town or etc. Suddenly there's like the movement is limited, and I'm talking with this person and I say, you know, how do you feel about like everything you've lost, you know, in terms of, you know, what you like to do in life and that you can't do anymore? And he looked at me and he said, "Pascal, we've done our work. This is just a thought. I take care of what is here. Like, the past is just a thought. Like, we've seen through this." And it was really poignant for me because I haven't seen through this. I hadn't seen through this in this way, you know. And I think there was a transmission in that moment, you know, something. But also, you know, respect that this person is able to recognize, oh, this is a thought. This has nothing to do with reality. Reality is here. I need to take care of this. I take care of this. And then, as if I had not understood what he had just said, I just kept going. And I said, "Okay, but what about the future?" Like, you don't know what's coming for you. Like, how do you feel about this? And same clarity of mind that I could see through the eyes, you know. It was like, "Pascal, we've seen through thoughts. You know, this is just a thought, the future. We take care of now, you know." And I remember we had actually stopped. We were walking and we had stopped for him to take his breath, you know, to be able to just after a few feet, you know, we were like standing there. And it was like, I just take care of the present. That's what I do. And I was like, oh yeah, there's a lot to thinking that I still have to, you know, unpack. Yeah. And so a worthy exploration, investigation. Any questions? We have time for a few. Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of a looping mechanism. So anxiety will produce thoughts. They're anxious, and so it produces. And so that's what mindfulness can do, is to recognize and kind of interfere in the process of keeping something alive, the hatred alive, keeping the worry alive, keeping the. And so we can see this. Just a thought crosses the mind, the emotion takes on, and what we call papancha will keep adding to it. Proliferation of mind. You just there's no decision. It's intentional. There's an intention. You know, there's a going towards worry. There's a feeding it, but it's not conscious. It's not chosen. And we can see this, and there's a possibility of interruption, yeah, interference.
So if I heard that, then it may not just be that there's agitation causing a thought. It can be, you know, both ways.
Yeah. And it's interesting to go see. You know, like, so I'm presenting ideas, and then we go on the field. And we discover, well done, there's a nuance here, you know, or this too is possible. So maybe, yeah, we can see this for ourselves. Yeah.
How do you decide when you follow your thoughts? Because, for example, 2 weeks ago I had a presentation to do and I was very late, and every day I was like, oh, I should do that. And I was like, no. And I think I should have followed the thought, because to not do it, it makes me anxious. So how do you decide, when do you decide to do it, to follow it or not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when to follow the thoughts or not to follow the thoughts. So I think from my experience, it seems like it requires getting out of habits. And bringing mindfulness, bringing awareness. And the more we're sensitive, the more we'll be able to discern. That's discernment, to discern, this is my friend, this is not my friend. And there's a lot of trial and error. So in this case, maybe there's something that comes out, say, like, well, actually, you know, procrastination or postponing as it's dangerous, that I might want to consider next time, you know. And Yeah, the discernment to be able to recognize what is my friend, what is a foe in my mind takes research and attention. And that's why we want to develop an attention that not just like touch on, but stays, that can get more information, more intuition, more. If we are more aware, we're going to be able to discern at some point. And also, that's the nature of life. It's sometimes we actually don't know. Even if we're very, very attentive, very plugged in, etc., we're not sure what is the right choice, what is the impact of speaking or not speaking, doing or not doing. So part of the reality is dukkha. It's the Pali word that means it's a little defective. So sometimes we can't know if a choice is the good choice. It's not possible to know. But we keep being attentive, and as we make the choice, more information is revealed, and we can reorient. Yeah. And so, in what you say, what I hear is you were deciding to not work on something, and the anxiety was building up. So the awareness might be helpful in the recognizing, oh, my love, we're getting really anxious about this. Let's do something about it, you know, instead of like, you know, oh, no, you know, so this being plugged in. And it's very like body-based, huh? Like that's why the first foundation, because being more attentive to the body, there's so much intelligence in there, you know, that we can bypass, you know, but the more we're plugged in, we'll feel like... there's a lot of information in the chest, in the throat, in the on the skin surface that we can gain access to, I think. It's been my experience.
In the meditation, I noticed that if there was like a little pain or something, then suddenly there would be this thought bubble. It's like, oh, have to call the doctor. Okay. Or just little things kept being generated very quickly. And I know I've heard Joseph Goldstein talk about asking, like, what is the attitude in the mind? And that's something that I'm confused by, is that, should I be open to, like, am I curious about that? Am I delighted? Am I worried? Is that what he means by check the attitude of the mind?
Yeah. So two things. I'll start with what I heard as the first thing that you mentioned that seems really interesting. It's an interesting discovery that you make that we can all benefit from. So it says that when there is contact, so itching, you seem to describe maybe itching, so there's contact, something is felt in the body. It could be something seen, heard, etc. But in this case, it's something you feel along the arm. So there's a contact, there's something physical that's being known, experienced. For human beings, when there's a contact, there is a perception conception that happens. So we feel something and it says itch on the arm. No? It organizes the world. It's not just like, you know, like you know it's the knee, or you know so you know it's a sound, you know it's a bird. It's very natural. There's a contact, there will be a perception and a conception. And what happens for human beings often is like there's contact. There's an organizing of the world, making sense of it. You know, so it says something. You know, you hear the bell. You know, it's not just like a bell. Huh? You're like, oh, end of meditation. You know, there's a conceiving. We conceive. What does that mean? We place it in the world. You know, it means the end of the meditation. So when there is a contact, there's a conception or perception conception, and it's followed often by proliferation. So there's an itch. Oh, it's itching. Oh my God, if it goes further, that's when the messenger takes a right or a left instead of going straight to the queen. That's what we do. There's a contact, and we can see this today. There'll be this, and it creates, it proliferates, it's generation, it's producing. It leaves the thing behind, couldn't care less about the itch. Now it's the fear, the I'm going to have to be driven to the hospital. Where's the hospital in Guelph? You know? And then we depart, you know, like this. I'm sure this doesn't happen to others, and always to me, this always falls on me. And we're reality is like way has been abandoned. Now we're just running with the thing. So here, meditation cuts that process. It stays at the point of contact, or that's what we try to do. We explore this. What would it be like to stay with instead of the story that is told, and we're very invested, delighted by the story that it tells, taken on a ride, you know, and it's fascinating, and it can be the fear, worry, fantasy, desire, etc. It goes in all kinds of direction, and the renunciation that we're doing, the practice that we're doing, is staying just with the feet, with the step. With the boredom. Oh, what is boredom? Instead of so boring, why did I sign up for this? This is the most boring thing in the world. When I tell my friend how boring meditation is, you know. That's the departure. That's the messenger getting lost in the... And so you seem to be describing this. It takes on. We don't have to judge this. We could be amused by it and free from, you know, like, oh, of course. It creates a story. There's a word for it in Pali, papancha. It's a fun word. Describing well that construction of the mind. So that's one thing that I heard. And the other thing is what Joseph says that might come from Sayada Uttajiniya, who tends to ask that question, what is the attitude of the mind? What's the attitude? This is, to me, as I hear it, is more of a investigation of the second question, how am I relating to this? So what's the attitude? It's an exploration of mind state. Is there curiosity and connection, or is there fabrication around, you know? Can I let go of the fabrication, the stories, embellishment? I think I've heard also fioriture in French. Mm-hmm. You know, you add a lot of, I think maybe in Latin or Italian, fioriture. But, what's the attitude? Is can it be known? Can the fear be known? Can the discomfort be known? So the attitude would be, what's the attitude so you become aware of, want to get rid of, feel something else? That's the attitude, is greed, the attitude is aversion, the attitude is doubt. What am I supposed to do with this? Or the attitude is curiosity, connection, compassion. Oh, it's piercing, not easy to feel. Or what is what I call piercing? Let me feel. Investigation, curiosity. Yeah? So that would be the, what's the attitude here? Don't want that. Resisting, okay? Resistance. Okay, yes, that'll be the last one, Andrea.
Thank you. What's the difference between feeling tone and mood? Because in what I've been exploring, it's so layered. So it's like, you know, there is an unpleasantness or pleasantness. Doesn't matter, really. And but then you can identify them, like, you know, it's unpleasant, annoyance, right? But sometimes I've noticed that there could be, let's say, an unpleasant sensation that comes with an unpleasant, it's joy. And then it comes with, it's so layered and so confusing. That's why I'm asking the question. Like, sometimes there is like an unpleasant sensation, let's say irritation, but then it may come with a sense of hope. That's why it's the layering. A sense of hope, because this irritation is a source of information. Therefore, the feeling tone changes. It's so flickering. It's hard to put in words. I don't know if I am making sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
So is there a difference?
Layered is a really good description. Flickering is a good description. So it's pretty quick. The mind, in a way, the mind is really quick. Huh? So there might be something. I'll give you an example that comes to mind for me something is felt at the in the body through the five senses that is unpleasant. Let's say like I taste something and it's unpleasant, but then the mind, if it's in the field of practice and there's mindfulness, then the mind gets interested. Oh, what is unpleasant? This is pleasant. The unpleasantness, because the mind has curiosity to it. Curiosity is a pleasant, is joyful curiosity. So let's say, yeah, I'll be sitting here and it hurts. It could be unpleasant, and then there could be fear, and it's another layer of unpleasantness, but it could be unpleasant, and the mind gets really curious, hold on, what is what I call unpleasant or piercing, you know? And then the next second, suddenly the Vedana is pleasant, because it's the mind, it comes from the mind that is interested. Or, you know, you hear the bell, it's pleasant, ah, relief. But then, it's time for me to wash the toilets, you know. You know, so it can go really quickly. It's pleasant, but it's also an unpleasant news, you know. And so the flickering is like this. It goes really quickly. The initial question you ask is, what's the difference between mood and feeling tone? And what I'd like to say about this is that, you know, in French we have this expression, I don't think it exists in English, is vase communicant. It's these foundations of mindfulness, for research purposes, we separate them. There's the body, there's the feeling tone, there's the mood or emotion. But the reality of it is like you're actually eating bread. Mm-hmm. There's flour in it and whatever they put in bread. Let's say it's cake. So it's eggs and chocolate and flour. Bread, I don't know, but I'm very curious right now.
Smoothie.
Yes, smoothie is excellent, thank you.
It's overlapping.
They're mixed together, you know, so within the sensation there is the pleasure or the displeasure. And, you know, so, and within the emotion, there is the physicality of it, of the heart beating, you know, so there, but it's good to deconstruct, for us to go isolate, to see the behavior and how one influences the other. And so layer is good, flickering is good. And another thing I'd like to bring, another way to think about it or explore it, is co-dependent conditioning. So one thing conditions the other. There's, you know, there's a play of it. You know, like one thing leads to another, that leads to another, that leads to another. There's the cause and effect play that happens. You know, a thought influences the feeling tone influences the emotion influences. There's a play like this that happens. That's why it's that easy to do what we do. I don't want to make it too complex, but as we slow down, we'll notice. And you know, I'll give you something that I've heard this winter. It's almost nothing, but I mean, I've heard many stories like this, tons of it, but this one I somehow liked it. So the person that comes to the group meeting and says, "So what I'd like to describe, it's almost nothing, but this is what I'd like to describe." So I'm doing the walking, just doing the walking, the stepping, and then I see on the ground, side, mushroom. Mushroom, image of the Father comes. Image of the Father, emotion comes. Emotions of something like regret, love, regret, you know. And very strong Father image comes. And I raise the head, and there's a cow. And joy comes, and Father's disappeared. And she said, "This is only, I just wanted to describe this." Yeah. And so she was talking about conditionality. If there was not the mushroom, there was not the thought of the Father. If there was not the thought of the Father, there was not the regret. If there was not the lifting of the head, there was not the cow, the joy, the disappearance of Father. This is how flickering, changing, and conditional it is, you know, that, and we all experience this, you know. I've heard this here, things like this. And so here we slow down and we pay attention and we see how a thought arises in the mind. And it's to see how conditional it is shows the lightness of it. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I was on retreat and I want to leave the dining hall. And there's somebody washing the floor, so I was going this way to leave the hall, to the dining hall, to go in the mid hall. And I was going to go this way, but there was somebody there washing the floor, so I go this way. And as I go this way, there's a fridge. And in the fridge, they said, "We put stuff, snacks for people, for retreatants." You know, I'm not hungry at all. But I saw the fridge, I opened the door, and then I see that somebody, there's eight, maybe 90 people on the retreat, and somebody has claimed the whole shelf for themselves. They put their name and all their stuff. There's like four shelves, and one is for one person. There probably is good reasons. They probably have needs and stuff, you know, but somehow. And then I get so angry. How can dare they claim a whole shelf of the fridge? There's 90 of us. And then I start walking to them, and I'm so enraged and self-righteous. And then I just reviewed what happened. Wow, if I had taken a right, none of this. But I took a left. There was a little gap in mindfulness. Suddenly, seeing the fridge, desire arose, opened the fridge, saw something visual, and now I'm in trouble. Now I'm hating somebody. I want to find out who's that person, and will I write to them a note with signing Meta at the end? You know? You know, there's 90 of us and only one of you, and you take a whole shelf, Metta. But in that moment, I saw my indignation and self-righteousness was built on a mup. You know, it depended on a mup. Truly. And maybe other things, but certainly the map, you know? And I was like, oh, why would I get so invested in that? You know, it's so, it rests on nothing. Yet I give it like all this seriousness, you know? And so that can lead to humor. It can lead to compassion. Like, oh my God, look at us, you know, creating all these stories and buying into them. And, you know. Okay, I'll stop. Beautiful day for practice, for exploration of the human heart, human mind. See, what's your way of investigating? What is your way? Make it yours. Okay. See you later.